Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host, and I'm the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd come down with gigantomastia if you inflamed me with the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, to tell us what's going on.
Hey, Tony. It's our penultimate 2025 Nonprofit Technology Conference show. First, put the fun in fundraising. Sarah Angelo and Dinesh Nadar want to see you have enjoyment, pure fun, in your fundraising. They reveal the psychology behind gamification and share elements and case studies of successful gamification. This will help you shift the power dynamics between your donors and your nonprofit. Sarah and Dinesh are both from Daffodil. Then, adopt new software. Our panel supports your new software project with step-by-step advice around leadership, champions, communication, preserving ideas, requirements, migration, smooth launch, post-launch strategies, and more. There are Melissa Dickinson, Evelyn Dickinson, and Nikki Nguyen, all from Logical Alternative Inc. Their titles are Ace, Diva, and Maven, respectively. On Tony's Take 2.
Ask hard questions.
Here is Put the Fun in Fundraising.
Thanks for being with our 25 NTC coverage. We are together at the Baltimore Convention Center, where our coverage is sponsored by Heller Consulting. Our topic now is putting the fun in fundraising, gamification strategies for donor engagement. With me are Sarah Angelo and Dinesh Nadar. They are both co-founders, with another person, not with us, of Daffodil. Sarah, why don't you start with, you can explain what Daffodil does. It's not, it's a lovely company name, but it's not descriptive of your work, so tell us what you do.
Absolutely. First of all, Tony, thank you so much for having us. Oh, we're really excited to be here at NTC in Baltimore. This is Daffodil's first NTC, and the reason why it's our first NTC is we are a new company. We were actually founded at the end of last year, so still in our first year.
Yes,
thank you.
Congratulations, newlywed year.
It is our newlywed year. Congratulations, Dinesh.
Yes.
Exciting for us to be invited to speak at NTC this year and present on this topic when we're still kind of a baby startup ourselves.
What do you do?
So what Daffodil does is we are a strategic philanthropy platform that connects high-impact nonprofits with donors that are looking to make an impact with their philanthropic capital. We work with donor-advised fund holders, wealth advisors, philanthropic consultants, foundations, and really the entire universe and ecosystem of people who help make charitable giving. And we are that mechanism for directing that gift and providing impact and accountability into the gift itself. Okay. And we do that through a tech-first solution.
Technology solution, technology platform.
That's right, through a technology platform.
Is the platform called Daffodil?
The platform is called Daffodil.
It's aptly named.
Yeah.
Like the host of this show, your platform is aptly named as well.
Exactly.
All right. Dinesh, why don't you get us started, with the gamification strategies. What are we talking about? What is gamification? Let's start with the basic.
Yeah. So the way we think about this is a lot of nonprofits' time and effort is spent in communicating the impact that they have on their communities. And they are doing that while they're actually doing the work to support those communities. And when we think about gamification, we think about how this could be made a lot easier for the nonprofits, but also made appealing to the donors in terms of how they're viewing their impact. And so the way we think about this is there's already so much data out there about nonprofits and their work. They leverage social media, they leverage newsletters, there is so much information out there with the IRS. And so one way of looking at it is taking all of the data that we have and putting it through layers where it becomes visually appealing to the donor in terms of how that impact is being showed. And so we look at this as, you know, when a donor comes in and they look at what a nonprofit's work is, they see almost like an impact journey of this is what they've done, you know, a few months back, and this is how they've lit their impact, and this is what the impact of their donations are. And so it's all, yeah, it's basically bringing the gamification aspect into how impact is being visualized for the donors in some ways.
So the visualizations, but yeah. Predominantly.
Yeah. If I were to reduce it to one question, Tony, when you ask people, why do you give? Why are you motivated to support a cause? Why do you contribute your time and resources? The answer that you hear most often is to make an impact. Donors give because they want to, because they find it satisfying. They want to be part of something bigger than themselves. And very often, nonprofits kind of lose sight of that in how they're communicating their impact and how they're engaging with their donors. They focus on maybe minutiae or things that are unique to that organization rather than solving that critical question about the heart of why a donor chooses to give. They give because they want to. It allows them to be part of a community larger than themselves, to have an impact. There's a cognitive resonance and there's an emotional resonance. Tapping into that, that's the gamification. You're making giving fun again. You're making giving part of what a donor wants to do.
Okay. Yeah, let's say a little more about making it more fun. And the psychology behind this gamification.
Absolutely. So donor motivations are really key to why they give. And the psychology, the behavioral psychology of how we think about donations and giving and philanthropy, a lot of it has grown out of consumer psychology and what we know about people's spending habits in general. But when you restrict it to the philanthropic landscape, and there are so many great reports on this, I really like the CCS fundraising report, Giving USA, the Fundraising Effectiveness Project. These are all people who are doing fantastic work about understanding donor motivations to give. And what it often comes down to is there's this social aspect. There's this aspect of wanting to be part of something bigger and make that investment. And when you don't have that connection, you don't have something that's pushing you to make that gift, your dollars stay dormant. There's so many people that want to give, that want to make a difference, and they just don't know how.
So how do you see this methodology pushing the donations?
So what we do at Daffodil to solve for that is we make it really seamless for donors to give with nudges, with monthly sustainers where they opt into making a monthly contribution that goes out to high-impact nonprofits. We do the matchmaking for them. And then as a result, they're going to get ongoing visibility into impact and accountability metrics. So instead of having to chase down that information from 7 different nonprofits that you support on their timeline, every month we're making sure that you're seeing what your gift really does, the outcome of your giving, which is what supplies so much of the joy and satisfaction of making an investment in your community.
Okay, and Dinesh, you're saying the way you're doing this frequent reporting is visualized.
Yep.
Gamification. How are we turning the donation and its impact, as you're saying, Sarah, into a game visualization?
I'll give you kind of a hypothetical example of sorts. So this is something we are still kind of evolving from a Daffodil perspective. But let's say you are coming into Daffodil or any kind of, you know, from a gamification perspective, you have an idea of what you want to donate. But that's where it is, right? You're still figuring it out. And so imagine if you come into a platform where you go, or a product where you go, okay, I would like to donate X dollars today. And we ask you a series of questions in terms of, are there specific cause areas you have in mind? Are there specific geographies you have in mind? And we can almost kind of use that information that the donor provides to give them a retroactive perspective. If you had donated, let's say, 6 months back, hypothetically, this is what your impact would have been. So we've kind of gamified the experience to the point where they're actually seeing their impact if they had actually done it.
If you had donated to this specific organization?
Or to these causes. in general, and this is how your money would have gone to these organizations based on our matchmaking in general. So if you think about Daffodil as a platform trying to matchmake based on your causes, we can actually leverage that information and create that kind of network and say, this is your impact. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But even hypothetically, this would have been your impact.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you had given
yes.
to this specific organization.
It could be a specific organization. It could be organizations which are part of that cause area in general, whatever causes you're trying to support.
Okay.
So you can restrict to specific organizations that you're interested in, or you can go broader in terms of these are specific geographies, or I don't want myself to restrict to a specific organization, but these are the specific list of cause areas that I'm interested
okay.
in.
Okay. For the 99.9% of listeners who are not Daffodil clients, because you're very new,
that's
and
right.
they haven't heard of you yet. What can they, and our listeners are in small and mid-sized nonprofits, which I imagine is your target demographic nonprofit. What can they take away from the gamification thinking and strategy?
Yeah, well, there are three things I'd say to that.
I'll add one for you. I'll say the top line one. Talk to Daffodil.
Because
you might have been too modest to say,
Number one, sign up for Daffodil. It's free for nonprofits to join us. It is free to get in front of donors. We don't charge nonprofits. So sign up, join up, join our mailing list, getdaffodil.com. But let me tell you some more about other things that you could do to bring gamification processes into your fundraising and into ways that you engage with your supporters and stakeholders. The first thing that you can do, take a look at your messaging and ask yourself, what question is this solving? If a donor is looking at my materials and looking at my communication strategies, what am I actually telling them? Is this solving their question of how am I making an impact and how are we making an impact together? So that's one thing you could do. The second thing you could do, giving is supposed to be fun. If someone is volunteering with you, serving on your board, being part of your mission, they're not doing it because they have to. They're doing it because they want to. How are you respecting and leaning into the fact that they're choosing to give you their money and their time? How are you celebrating that choice and making that an easier choice to make? And the third thing that I would tell you is have fun with your campaigns, have fun with your fundraising, and don't be afraid to inject some personality into it. In our session that we're leading tomorrow, we're talking about two case studies, one from a really large nonprofit in Minnesota and one from a mid-sized nonprofit in San Francisco. And both had tremendous success with campaigns where they threw away their historic playbook and leaned into something that really resonated with their communities and was unique to their mission. It allowed them to re-engage donors who had walked away. More than 60% of donors give once and never give again. Yeah. That is a huge opportunity that's just left on the table. And when you get creative and think out of the box and inject some personality into your brand, into your fundraising, that's a huge opportunity to win them back.
I've heard donor attrition rates even higher than 60, like 75% plus after the first gift. All right, so share the story of the San Francisco mid-sized nonprofit, what they did to throw away the playbook, have more fun.
Absolutely.
Share that one.
So this was a campaign that I ran about 4 years ago, and we knew that we wanted to do more digital fundraising.
This is your pre-Daffodil days.
My pre-Daffodil days.
It's hard to believe when you were just a seed.
Yes.
Daffodil was just a seed in
fun
the minds
fact, a
of
daffodil,
the future three co-founders.
A daffodil is a bulb.
Oh, it's a bulb, not a seed.
Yeah.
Oh, bulb. All right. So you were in your pre-bulb days. All right.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's not take my silly metaphor any further than
so
that.
My,
we don't need grubs and worms and seeds and fertilizer and pH balancing in the soil. We don't need all that. Okay. So go ahead, please. All right.
So in my pre-Daffodil days, I was a fundraiser. I was a frontline fundraiser at nonprofits of all different sizes. I was working for this organization in San Francisco that had a demographic that a lot of people assume don't give online, a demographic that's mostly older than 65. And I wanted to try something new. So just to have a little bit of fun, I found a local celebrity who was really well known to our mission area. Not someone who's a household name, not someone that has a massive social media following, but someone who, if you were into our mission and into our niche, you'd say, oh, that guy, cool. And we asked him if he'd be willing to make two phone calls. And he said, two phone calls, like, okay, to people who are interested in what I do, sure. So we ran a campaign just saying, give any amount, and this niche celebrity is going to randomly call two supporters, and you're going to get 15 minutes to talk to him. This was a campaign that cost me $0 to put together. It just leaned into a relationship we already had with someone who cared about our mission. And the campaign was tremendously successful in re-engaging donors that hadn't been active in 3 or 4 years. It had our largest open rates, our largest conversion rates, our largest forwarding rates. And it was something that was totally different than anything we'd ever done before. It was ring, ring, this celebrity is calling, you want to talk to him. And that unusual approach of what you get for donating really resonated with people. And 2 years later, many of those new donors who came in as a result of that campaign were still supporting.
Okay, so you helped defeat your what would have been a higher donor attrition rate after the first year.
Oh, yeah.
2 years later, many were still with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Right. What you normally would expect to be like a 75% attrition rate was, I think, about 40.
Yeah, very good. Near half. Your session description talks about shifting power dynamics between donors and nonprofits.
That's right.
Dinesh, how are you doing that?
Yeah, so the way we think about this is in terms of what a power dynamic is, so the funds obviously are sitting with the donors in general. And the way we think about this, there's this aspect of nonprofits having to solicit those funds in terms of, you know, from their perspective, like what does this look like? And so shifting the power dynamics in our view is basically creating a balance where the information flow is more seamless in terms of how nonprofits are communicating their impact is resonating with the donors in a way where it doesn't feel like I'm being asked for something and that is why I'm providing this information, as opposed to the proactive aspect of this is what we're doing, and donors actually appreciating that. So that's where kind of, you know, the power dynamics of not being asked or told to do something, as opposed to being, this is our impact, and we're communicating this, and this is you know, the impact for work. And so that is an essential, like the information flow kind of rebalancing the dynamics in some way.
Yeah, recognizing we're contributing here too.
Yep.
We're creating.
Yep.
We're contributing work toward the solution to the problem that we're all committed to.
And the proactive aspect is what I would call out in terms of not being asked for it. So I think that contributes to the kind of the power dynamics in some ways as well.
And okay. Tony, nonprofits waste so much time doing custom impact reporting this and bespoke communication for all different funders and supporters. What we're doing at Daffodil is we're reclaiming their time from that very custom, very unscalable action. Instead of being a development person who's leading communication and talking to a portfolio of 100 different donors with 100 different ways that those donors like to hear from you, we are building something where your one approach to impact and communication and outcomes is what's going out to your portfolio of 100 donors. Instead of having to focus one-to-one, we're one-to-many. So you no longer need to spend your time with these custom impact reportings and different ways of communicating to different donors, because we believe that we've found the best way to communicate your impact to donors, and we're doing that for you.
All right, that's contrary to a lot of advice, which is segment, be specific in not only in asking but also in reporting specific to what the person is, or that cohort is interested in.
Absolutely. And when a donor joins Daffodil, we know what they're interested in. So we can do this for the nonprofit. Yeah. Instead of having to customize their communication to each specific donor, we take their impact information through our platform, and we're giving that impact and accountability data to our network of donors.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. We have a few minutes left. If there's something we haven't talked about yet, you said your session is tomorrow.
Our session is tomorrow.
Yeah. So
but
plan, what else? Is there anything else?
Absolutely. Our session is just one step of what's kind of next for a pretty busy 3 months for Daffodil. We are a young company, as we mentioned, and we are just wrapping up a pilot phase of our product. But in June, we are launching our product to the Denver area. That's where I'm from. So any nonprofit in Denver, any supporter and donor in Denver, They can be part of what we're building. We're going to be hosting a launch event. You can stay tuned and follow Daffodil more for what's going on in June. And then beyond that, we're going to be going live in different localities throughout the country.
Through the remainder of the year?
Through the remainder of the year, that's right. Yeah. We're going to be targeting Miami, where our third co-founder is based, and New York, where Dinesh lives, and other parts of the country where there are a large nonprofit presence.
Okay. Dinesh, where do you live in the city?
Manhattan.
What part of Manhattan?
Midtown.
Midtown, east, west?
Kips Bay, specifically.
Kips Bay,
yeah.
East side.
East side.
East side, Midtown, in the 30s or so, isn't it?
Yeah, 30s, yeah.
30s, east side?
Yeah. Been there 20 years, almost.
Like Madison Ave? Madison?
Second Ave.
Madison, second. Oh, yep. Further
east.
Okay. All right. I lived uptown, Inwood.
Oh, nice.
For 10 years.
Okay.
Now I live on a beach in North Carolina.
Okay.
I did live 10 years in Manhattan.
Okay.
All right. Nice. Well, good wishes for Daffodil.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you for sharing about gamification. All right. So why don't you give a shout out? Let Dinesh do it this time. How can people follow Daffodil?
Yep. So getdaffodil.com is our website.
Daffodil.com.
Yep. Just go there.
It's a bulb, not a seed?
It's a bulb. It's absolutely a bulb. Okay. That's the easiest way to get to us. We are on Instagram, other social media as well. Look up Get Daffodil. You'll find us there as well. And then, hit us follow. And then we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sarah? Thanks, Tony.
Sarah Angelo? No, that's correct. That's incorrect. Sarah Angelo.
Nailed it.
Sarah Angelo, co-founder of Daffodil, along with her the second of three. That's how I would say
that's
it.
That's right. You've got two-thirds of us.
Along with her second of three co-founders, Dinesh and Nadar. And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of 25 NTC, where we are sponsored by Heller Consulting, software services for nonprofits.
It's time for Tony's Take Two.
Thank you, Kate. Asking hard questions, I just spent 2 days on site with a client, it was facilitated by another consultant. The subject of the 2 days of meetings was their digital marketing. And we asked a lot of hard questions, like, what should the organization's primary messaging be? What are our most, most mission, brand, and value aligned messages? Is our own messaging aligned, consistent, across all our channels, print and digital, and all the platforms that we use? They're predominant on Facebook and Instagram and Twitch. So is messaging consistent? And what can we do better? What channels and platforms can we exploit more? What should we be cutting back on, or maybe even ending? Do we have all the skills that we need in the team? Are there people on the team that need support or investment, professional development? It was just a very, very valuable 2-day exercise. Everybody felt very good about it at the end. It's an exhausting exercise. Again, it was facilitated by someone who facilitates meetings and also knows digital marketing. That is not at all. Neither one of those is MySpace. I was there talking about planned giving and a little broader, but I was not leading the facilitation. You need a pro to do this, to coalesce all the opinions and find the through lines, right? And just help manage the conversation flow, because there were it's probably 10, 11 people around the table. So you need a pro helping you to do this. But just the overall thing is just, it was valuable. It was reflective. People were genuine about what their needs are and about what they think they could do with a little more, support or investment, and what they feel we are not doing well. Just a reflective and informative exercise overall over 2 days. So I encourage you to have these occasionally, whatever subject it may be for you. For us, as I said, it was digital marketing, but you may be aligned or have concerns about something totally different. It's just valuable to take time away. Everybody puts their phone down, closes their laptops, and participates in an exercise devoted, you know, everybody's attention focused on whatever the subject is that you want to cover. So asking hard questions, it's valuable, it's insightful. And that's Tony's take two. Kate?
Sounds like you learned a lot and had fun.
We did learn a lot. Yeah, there's a lot to do in follow-up, though, too. You got an all-important follow-up. You know, things have to actually be implemented that you talk about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was fun. Exhausting, but fun. Yeah.
And you said this was in New York?
That was in New York City. Yes, I was in New York City for 2 days. Yeah.
You probably know my next question. Did you go to Broadnosh Bagel?
Well, actually, all right, I misspoke. I was not in New York City.
Oh, you were not in the city.
I just said I was in New York City. I was not in New York City. I was on Long Island. I was on Long Island. So no Broadnosh at 85th and Broadway. Not this time. No.
Okay.
Well, good up though. Anybody traveling to or living in New York City, Broadnosh Bagels. Kate knows it because her school was there, AMDA, mm-hmm. where she trained for 2 years. And I know it because she brought me to it.
Yes, for after my graduation. I was like, Tony, I have to show you this bagel place.
Yeah.
My favorite bagel place.
Now, I want people to know that was not the graduation celebration meal. It was not at Broadnosh Bagels. We went to a very nice restaurant to celebrate your graduation. That's not bagel shop.
The only thing my uncle got me was bagels.
Bagel. Hey, but the bagel had salmon on it. You got fresh sliced salmon. That was an upgrade. That was a meaningful bagel, graduation bagel.
Yes. No, we did. We did eat before. I do remember.
Yes.
We've got buku buttloads more time. Here is Adopt New Software.
Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the 2025 Nonprofit Technology Conference. We're all together in Baltimore, Maryland at the Convention Center, and our 25 NTC coverage is sponsored by Heller Consulting, technology services for nonprofits. The session we're talking about right now is Adopt New Software, Get Buy-In, Training, and Integration. My guests are Melissa Dickinson, Evelyn Dickinson, and Nikki Nguyen. Melissa is Communications Ace at Logical Alternative, Inc. Evelyn is founder and technical tech diva at Logical Alternative, Inc. And probably not too surprising, Nikki is also at Logical Alternative, Inc. Nikki is client success maven. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. Melissa, Evelyn, Nikki, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
We have an ace, a diva, and a maven. This should be very... All right, keep it light. Let's not... Yeah, that's... I love it. Let's not take ourselves too seriously.
Exactly.
We try not to. Right.
Yes, thank you. Good. Right on. Good. Okay. I'm the boring one. Host. Any schmo could be a host, but it takes talent to be an ace, diva, or a maven. All right. Adopting new software. So, Melissa, let's just start with you. Could you just give us an overview of the subject matter that you covered in your session about adopting new software? What high-level view?
Sure. So we've been doing this exact thing for about 35 years. So when we decided to come to N10 for the first time, that was a topic that was on the list. And I said, well, if we're going to talk about a topic, we should talk about that one. And so it's a lot of material. You know, there's many layers to that process. So we just kind of started from the beginning, the planning stages. How do you get buy-in from your leadership team? How do you make sure that everybody is taken along for the ride? You find your champions. And so we talked a lot about that in the session. how to make sure that your team is always communicating and in a safe space, and you're making sure to record ideas and possible risks and pitfalls and all of that. So we talked a lot about that. Then we got into the technical side of it, which was your requirements gathering. How do you decide whether you can do it all in-house or whether you need a consultant's help? We got into what are the data migration sort of strategies and pitfalls, things that can come up along the way. And then what do you do for launch to make sure your go live is smooth? And finally, what do you do post launch? So it's just, you know, basically from A to Z, how do you get this done with the minimum amount of pain and the highest likelihood of success?
Okay. Let's at least get through the...
It was a lot for a session. Yeah.
So I was going to say, let's at least get through the non-technical part up to and stopping short of requirements. But we might go further. There's no reason not to go further. I'm not saying cut it off, but let's at least get through the non-technical section. So leadership. All right, leadership buy-in. Maybe let's just continue down the line. Logical progression. Evelyn, can you get us started with how we get leadership buy-in?
Yeah, it's a sticky wicket. You have to first make sure that your leadership really believes in the product, absolutely believes in the cause, what's happening, why you're doing this. And you have to get them to publicly acknowledge that to the entire team. You know, a lot of times, and it actually came up in our presentation, where folks, I think they... especially your leadership, they want to hedge their bets sometimes. They'll be like, we need this done. And if you get it done, great. And if you don't, then, you know, you fall on your sword. It happens. I think, you know, we're as leaders, we're all so pressed, we're so busy. And so one of the things we talk about is making sure that you have a healthy organization before you get started. You have a healthy acknowledgement from your leadership team that this is an important thing and that the whole organization is going to be committed to it. So you're not constantly struggling internally with folks who maybe don't want to commit the resources, like at the management, at the department levels, because it does require, especially with larger implementations that affect the whole organization, it just requires everyone's commitment.
Okay,
you got to start there.
You want to make sure that the leadership is committed.
Absolutely,
it's unquestionable. Mm-hmm. Okay, that could be. Let's drill down a little further. In terms of getting that leadership buy, so you've made it clear that leadership has to be committed, you know, publicly. Mm-hmm. But to get that leadership buy, to get that commitment, I've had previous NTC panels other years say, you know, it's valuable to have allies. Like if you feel a business need, it's valuable to have an ally or two to help you make the case. Can you talk some about getting the leadership to the point of commitment?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that actually came up at our panel as well. There was one gal there who was facing very similar issues, and she asked us after the presentation about that very thing. She had a boss who was not willing to get committed, and they were looking for solutions. And a lot of times you can go laterally within the organization. So I should say, I used to be the CIO of a multi-billion dollar company. So I have a perspective of being that person. And so, you know, you just need to find the believer, right, at the leadership level. Someone is going to recognize the value of what you're trying to accomplish. And if they don't, then, you know, you shouldn't start. That it's hard to say that sometimes, but if you can't get there, you shouldn't start.
You shouldn't start, yeah.
Yeah, because you're going to fail.
Why fight? And you're not going to get the commitment.
And then it's going to be twice as hard the next time, right? So you just have to, you know, you have to just reach out within the organization, find out where I hate to use these buzzwords, the value proposition is, right? This is going to save so much time, or this is going to save so much money. And then you just have to find the person that really has the bandwidth to care, because we're all so pressed these days.
And if now's not the time, maybe, you know, maybe... take your time, you know, retrench and find that ally, but maybe 6 months from now, you know, it may take some time across the organization. Let's give Nikki a chance. It looked like you were going to add something, Nikki.
I, Yeah. I just want to add in there that in the process of figuring out what your solution is or what the change needs to be, what we talked about in our presentation was interviews with people who will be doing the process or who will be using the software, interviews with leadership, and so various levels within the team. And often within those interviews, you find your champions and you're able to find and use those in your use case. Why do we even need to make the change? Why are we going into this situation to begin with? And then along with that, Logical Alternative has all, you know, templates for gathering requirements and things like that. So in the process of doing the research within the organization of what's needed, very often you can find the evidence that's required to convince leadership. But that particular challenge of finding the person to just say yes and stand behind it, is sometimes it goes a little bit further, and like Evie was saying, that requires going lateral or using numbers. Sometimes it's using numbers. So.
Okay. Melissa, you actually raised your hand.
I was going to say exactly what Nikki just said. Nikki covered it. The only other thing we talked about, bring the data, right? Bring the data. So if you can come to leadership and say, we did interviews with the whole team and 72% of them said that this is a pain point and it needs to be solved for them to do their job well. That's hard to argue with. So that was the one thing, you know, just like Nikki said. And the other thing is sometimes we also had somebody in our panel who said, everyone in the organization is too busy, does not have time to do this work, to do these interviews. And I said, that's the point at which you think about, do we need a consultant to do these interviews? So.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we just kind of jumped ahead a step, but you've got to get the leadership buy-in before you can take the time to meet with the department heads to take the time to interview. But once you do, once you get down to the folks we call process owners or the people who are literally doing the work that you're trying to improve upon, that's where the golden opportunity is. You do the discovery, you get findings, you roll all those up, and then you can make a presentation to the board that really usually drives the point home.
And Evelyn, what did you call them? Process?
Process flows.
Process flow. Mm-hmm. No, the people.
The folks who actually...
Process owners.
We used to call them users.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that an outdated... I got a degree in information systems in 1984.
Awesome.
Is users,
me too.
Is users outdated? Is users a term of bygone?
I'm actually trying to be more specific because sometimes when you have someone who's a process owner, they're responsible for that or they're the subject matter expert a particular workflow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not the end user.
Correct.
Necessarily.
Right. They may be the person who's responsible for the outcomes of that or the divisor of it. Yeah.
Where'd you get your information systems degree?
University of South Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
Carnegie Mellon.
Nice.
Nikki, so you brought up champions a couple times. So now we've got our public explicit commitment by leadership, no question. Now the champions, that's the next step. Who are the champions?
Ideally,
it's like the Queen song. We are the champions.
Right?
Who are the champions? Are the champions? I'm not going to
do that to you all.
No, I should. Nor should I have. All right.
Ideally, you're going to have champions within your user groups, if you will, and in leadership, and on your implementation team. And your champions are going to be the people who are sort of your early adopters. They're the people who are going to help buffer the flow of complaints and grouchiness that is absolutely coming your way. And then they help keep the optimism of this change going, right? Yeah, yes. So they're the people who are saying, hey, you know that thing that you used to hate? I think I just found the solution in here, right? It's also the person, whoever's doing the rollout is also going to complain. You are also going to complain even if you're leading this change. It's best that you not complain to the people who are already grouchy, right? So your champions are your insiders. And in leadership, you've got a
buffers,
champion
maybe,
there.
Maybe buffers. I'm not trying to change your language, but like they're buffers between the you yourself leading the thing, leading the project are going to be complaining. So they're buffers. Maybe they're therapists too. I don't know.
But in some cases
they're certainly protecting from the groundswell of discontent that you've created with this project, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, go ahead, Evelyn. You were going to say.
I was just going to say not necessarily.
Did I overstate it?
Okay. Well, right. I mean, I tend to.
I didn't know.
No, says, you no, are not overstating it.
I'm a very positive person, and okay. I also have a deep belief in humanity. So I'm a martial artist, so I use a lot of kung fu terminology, and that's not uncommon in business process change. So what happens is as you're doing the interview, so you identify all your workflow processes that we're going to renovate. You find the folks who are doing them and who have deep knowledge of those processes. You document what we call the as-is. Then you identify and interview all of the folks involved, as many as possible, and you mine that for information. And in the process of talking to those folks, you find folks who are just really positive about this change. They're excited.
These are your potential champions.
Yeah, okay. They're really excited about it. But the other cool thing is we're talking about grouchiness, is that, you know, everybody doesn't approach everything from a positive perspective. And that is super valuable. So what you do is, when people are being negative, you don't take it personally. You value that input. And you work with those folks, and I like to call them risk managers, right? You value them. You value their input. You sit down with them and say, what can go wrong? You know, please share your valuable perspective. Let's make notes of that. And what you do is you turn those people into champions. You turn them into folks and say, like, hey, we've got to fix these problems. We need to address these concerns.
Well, like
and
Nikki,
let's note that.
Like Nikki mentioned, this problem that you have, we can solve that. We're going to take care of that. I mean, that'll help convert
exactly.
Some folks into
champions. Like, you put your arm around them.
This bottleneck that I've experienced for years is now going to be resolved.
Yeah.
And maybe
that's cynicism, maybe that's fear of change, maybe they're just not really great at, you know, technology, maybe, you know, their toaster broke that morning, whatever.
Maybe they're worried about losing their job or losing their relevance in the organization. So asking why they're resisting is helpful.
Yes, right, the why. Yeah,
And then
what's getting, you may hear a lot of symptoms, but what's the cause of your real discontent.
Exactly.
And take it seriously.
Valuing it.
Evelyn, you mentioned something, interviewing the Oz's. Did I catch that right? Interviewing the...
I think maybe no.
As is.
As is.
What does that mean? We're interviewing the as is.
Yeah, so when you're trying to read...
Thank you for translating.
Yeah,
right.
She speaks Evelyn.
Okay.
Your current work... Let's just take a very simple example. Like you're trying to rebuild your donor management workflow, right? So
I like how she says that's simple. We're going to take a simple example.
Sorry. So, you know, you get a donation on the website, goes to, you know, it notifies, you look and see how much money this person's donated, whatever that process is, how you're doing what you're doing today. And you make a little flowchart or sketch it on the back of a napkin or whatever you need to do, figure out what departments are involved, what individuals are involved. So that's the way we do it today. That's the way our current systems
flow. That's the as is.
Exactly.
Okay, I was just trying to flesh that out for listeners.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I heard it as Oz's. I was like thinking of the Emerald City.
I probably slurred it, but that's kind of fun too.
I got it. Could have been. Was it about? Well, we're approaching, right? We're approaching the Emerald City with our new software implementation. So the wizard is going to grant. This wizard is going to grant us all our wishes.
And your little doggy too.
Resolve all our bottlenecks and your little dog too.
Yeah. Right.
That's the Wicked Witch. No, we don't bring her in. All right. All right, Melissa, let's turn to you, because we haven't heard from you recently. communications and safety, you mentioned in the overview. What's the thinking of a logical alternative there?
So my role in these types of rollouts is a lot of training. I do a lot of the training videos, training repositories, sort of on the end where we've got the new thing in place and now we want to make sure that everybody knows how to use it, that it's sustainable. So if somebody leaves the organization, there's this repository of training materials. So
Oh, yeah, that's important. New people.
Yeah.
New people.
Yeah.
Everybody, so that's what the organization is going to change.
Yes, that's the kind of communication that I'm doing in these sorts of rollouts.
Okay. What kind of advice do you have?
So I would
safety
start...
Safety, too. You mentioned safety also.
Yeah. Well, safety...
Or keeping people safe.
Well, okay, that's more in the interview process and during the process of the rollout.
I'm sorry. I'm confusing it. Okay. Let's just talk about the communication, the training.
Yeah, sorry.
The training part. No. I'm sorry. Yeah. The training part. What's your advice around? You're the training...
Well, I think just what I kind of started to say, which is
Ace.
That... which is that... I would say, you know, keep in mind that the people who are here now may not be the people that are doing this job in the future, or you may want to bring people along over a period of time. So you kind of want to group your training groups, you know, so that you're not trying to train people in different departments all at the same time. You want to take maybe a different approach or a different focus for each group. So there's a structure to the training planning. And that's part of our toolkit that we shared during the session. And then once you have that structure, you sort of schedule your different groups, you have your group leaders, and then you have your tasks list that they've already given you in the process of the planning, right? You know all the tasks that everybody in that team has to do. So then you create videos for these. Usually in my case, it's a short video, maybe 20, 30 seconds even, just for one task at a time. And then we have a repository that we build that is accessible to everybody in the organization that can be added to at any time. So anytime we take a support request that wasn't already covered, I make a video and I put it in the repository. And then we make sure that on the admin side of whatever system they're using, there is a dashboard that has access to all those videos with a table of contents. So if for some reason everybody in the org was gone next year, you still have that sustainability.
Okay. You mentioned a resource that you shared. Is that something that is on a shared drive that we could share with listeners?
Yes, absolutely.
Could you email me the link?
Absolutely.
And we'll include it in the show note.
Yeah, we provided a lot of tools in that session because we covered a lot of material. So yeah, absolutely.
Okay, please.
I also wanted to say, Melissa, could you speak a little bit about... how folks learn differently, so we create different tools for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with some of the tools that we have now to record video, it's very helpful because they transcribe. So if you're more of a word learner rather than a video learner, you know, we kind of get that built in. We also have different types of learning sessions, which can be hands-on or, I guess we just kind of find out who are we training. We often talk to the leader of that team and say, you know, is there an approach that would work better for your team?
Okay. Now safety. I was taking notes as you were doing the overview.
Sure.
Where does safety fit in?
Well, that's more talking about the things that Nikki and Evie were talking about, which is the process of gathering all that information, the as-is, right? And the planning, the requirements for your rollout. So when you're involving the team in these conversations, you want it to be egalitarian. You want it to be democratic as much as possible. You want to make sure that you're approaching it from a fun, upbeat, this is going to be good attitude, and you want to make sure they know they're in a safe space, especially when they're being interviewed one-on-one, but also in a group setting, that if you have reservations, if you have questions, it's safe to ask that, because you want to capture as much information as possible during that planning process, during the requirements gathering process. The more information you get, the better your chances of success, and that is created by making sure that everybody's voices are valued and everybody knows that they can share their thoughts and ideas.
And Nikki, it's important to record all these ideas that Melissa's talking about. Yeah, can you expand on that for us? The preservation of all these thoughts and ideas?
Yeah, for the most part, Logical Alternative has used audio recordings so that when one is conducting the interviews, you can be as present as possible and ask questions and investigate whatever is coming up. It's wonderful if you can have two interviewers in that space so that one person can take written notes, but all of that information is gathered and then is used to inform next steps.
That also brings up another safety point that Evie mentioned in the presentation, which is when we're recording the interviews, we make sure to tell the person we're interviewing, this is not going to be shared with management whole cloth. It's for our purposes. We're going to take the relevant information, put it in the report in the repository.
And anonymize it. Mm-hmm. Did I say that right?
You did, yeah.
Anonymize,
it's not an easy
it.
Word.
Yes.
Yeah, right. That's super important.
Safety. Right?
Yeah.
You want honest... you want honest opinions.
Well, reality is often barriers to process efficiency have to do with individuals. So, you know, you're not after that person's job, but you want to make sure that we identify where the barriers in a process are so we can fix them. It's okay. It's not personal.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Nikki, it sounds like you wanted to add something, and then we're going to close. So go ahead. Please do.
Related to that, just it was brought up earlier that if someone's afraid that they're going to lose their job or that they will become obsolete, then creating that space for them where they feel heard. And if it's possible to figure out that someone might be experiencing that kind of fear, find a way to offset it. Because they're not going to be completely honest. If the fear is that they won't be there after this rollout, or that their whole existence, you know, the thing they spend 3 hours a day doing will no longer exist, the likelihood that they're not going to share everything is pretty high.
Hi. So, all right. Yeah. Thank you. They're the ace, the diva, and the maven, all with Logical Alternative Inc. Melissa Dickinson, communications ace, Evelyn Dickinson, founder and tech diva, and Nikki Nguyen, the client success maven, all stuck with a just middling like host.
You need to work on that.
Host right. extraordinaire.
I will. I need to work on my self-esteem. It's terrible. Well, I'm in the face of an ace, a diva, and a maven. I got no chance. It's unbelievable. All right.
Thank you
very much. Thank you for sharing.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.
Logical Alternative Inc. Good wishes to the company. And thank all of you for being a part of our 25 NTC coverage, where we're sponsored by Heller Consulting, technology services for nonprofits. Thanks for being with us.
Next week, our 25 NTC coverage wraps up with your emergency marketing plan and your more diverse board. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at TonyMartinetti.com. And next week, we're going to be together.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.